The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 7th chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
Now, when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, they noticed that some of the disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jewish people do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, thus observing the tradition of the elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And there are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups, pots, and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and the scribes asked Jesus, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" Jesus said to them, "Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines.' You abandon the commandment of God and hold to human tradition." Then Jesus called the crowd again and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. For it is from within, from the human heart, that all evil intentions come: fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these things come from within, and they defile a person." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Let's return to the closing verses of the reading from Deuteronomy. "But take care and watch yourselves closely, so as neither to forget the things that your eyes have seen, nor to let them slip from your mind all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children." By the time we encounter Moses addressing the Israelites in the 4th chapter of Deuteronomy, God's people have seen a lot: deliverance from slavery in Egypt, 40 years in the wilderness, and recently at Mount Horeb, they received God's commandments. Now, especially when it comes to God's commandments, Moses impresses on his hearer that it's not about remembering a list of do's and don'ts. It is about remembering life lived in relationship with God. Take care. Watch yourself closely. Do not forget what you have seen. Your life, your story, is also a story in the life of God, a gift given for you to share with your children and your children's children. So in this way, what's happening in the fourth chapter of Deuteronomy is like three generations sifting through an old cardboard box at grandma's house on a rainy vacation day in late August 2021. Three generations. A grandmother, her daughter, and her daughter's daughter. No one is wearing a mask, even though the granddaughter is only seven and therefore unvaccinated. But all family members, 12 and up, have been vaccinated. And outside the grandmother's home, all are masked all the time, as mandated, all CDC COVID commandments followed to the letter. And still a whiff of tension hangs in the air, for they all know, as we know, that we are on a threshold where COVID is concerned. A grandmother, me. A daughter, mine, Melissa, who lives in Oregon. A granddaughter, Bridget. She's seven. And a dilapidated cardboard box. As soon as I opened the box, the spirit of my mother, the great-grandmother in this scenario, is in the room. And she's wearing clip-on earrings made from black Bakelite discs. Some of you have no idea what Bakelite is, but they used to make those black telephones with dials out of that plastic. Also jewelry. So black Bakelite clip-on earrings with faux pearls the size of quarters. Tray 1960s chic. And there are more earrings in the box made from pierced ears. These are mostly mine, or were mine, and they are all missing a mate. But mining for the shiniest and most precious objects in the box, Bridget pulls out and sets aside necklaces with broken clasps and an inseparable tangle of Mardi Gras beads that looks like green and purple spaghetti, until she shrieks gleefully, for she's found a small gold ring set with a tiny diamond. But her joy is immediately tempered when she notices that the ring is no longer a perfect circle. The ring is broken, as if it's been cut. How is this possible? Why? Why is the beautiful ring broken? Bridget demands to know. And so, for the first time so far in her life, Bridget will hear from her mother and grandmother the story of Great Aunt Isabel's ring. Great Aunt Izzy, we called her, whose closets were choked from floor to ceiling with one cardboard box after another, all containing family artifacts, the Reed family going back generations. And yet from one of these boxes, Aunt Izzy has given a ring to Melissa, who is really her favorite granny's. And she is 10 at the time she receives the ring. And Melissa recalls and talks about what her aunt told her about the ring, how Izzy and her sister Molly had each received identical gold rings with little diamonds when they were around 10 years old. Perhaps in anticipation, diamond rings as placeholders for the day when a wedding would be slipped on the finger. Well, great aunt Molly did get married late in life. She married Uncle Larry, who was a psychology professor at the college where Aunt Molly was the dean. Aunt Izzy didn't marry, but she also became a university dean at a nursing school in Buffalo. But that was after she had served as a nurse in World War II and had a story about meeting the Shah of Iran in the Middle East, which was followed by moving to Paraguay, where with dollars from the US, she established Paraguay's first nursing school. From the day she received it, Melissa treasured her great Aunt Izzy's ring, and it never left her finger until one day, one very rainy Memorial Day in Rutland, Vermont, Melissa and a friend, seventh graders, with places to go and people to see, left our house with Melissa toting a huge striped golf umbrella, which was big enough to shelter both girls. And so they came to Route 7, Rutland's main drag and the only four-lane road in the entire town. And this pair, so impatient to get wherever they were going, and to this day, nobody remembers where that was, but they were so eager that they opted to forego the three-block walk to a cross street where there was a light at the intersection. So, standing on the curb, the girls did all the right things, mostly. They looked one way, they looked the other way, they kept looking. They waited until it seemed that the traffic had cleared, no cars visible on either side, Melissa still holding this ginormous umbrella, and Melissa, ever the leader, steps off the curb first into the road ahead of her friend, who now sees what they had missed due to a dip in the road. And from the edge of the road, the friend called out to Melissa, but it was too late. A pickup truck emerged from the dip and struck Melissa full on, causing her body, according to stunned witnesses, to fly up in the air 10 feet before landing like a rag doll on the middle of the road. Traffic stopped. Police arrived, and Melissa's friend called me with news that no parent ever wants to receive. So I flew in my car to the scene, and inside a huge circle of flashing lights that had blocked off all four lanes in both directions, I found Melissa, covered with a quilt donated by a neighbor, lying on her back, her eyes open and blinking, and able to say, "Hi, Mama." Even though she was transported to the hospital, strapped to a board with all the protocols afforded anyone who might have a spinal cord injury, Melissa did not, in fact, suffer any serious injuries. beyond a nasty contusion above one of her knees. And in fact, the most serious casualty was Great Aunt Izzy's ring, which, like the rest of her clothing, had to be cut away from her body before she could be examined and x-rayed. 1 year after that accident, Melissa moved with her family from the second largest city in Vermont to the second largest city in Massachusetts, to Worcester, where sidewalks and traffic lights or stop signs at every intersection are more or less the norm. Still, 1 year later, even though Melissa had no memory of her encounter with the truck, whenever she came to a curb and had to cross a street, now always with intersections and traffic lights and stop signs, it took every ounce of her will to make her foot step off the curb into the street, no matter how green the light. Which pretty much wraps up at least a section of that story. And as we tied a bow in it, so to speak, Bridget's 7-year-old eyes were very wide, for she could see it all. An impression had been made. The stories of her mother and her grandmother were now becoming her story, too. And so her mother, Melissa, pocketed the broken ring and resolved that she would have the ring repaired and wear it on her little finger and remember all the stories and all that that ring had seen, until the day when the mother would pass the ring on to her daughter. Moses, helping the Israelites pack for the next leg of their journey with God, the one that will take them across the Jordan and into the land of Canaan, the promised land, the land where milk and honey was anticipated, the land that would become home. Moses helping the Israelites pack for that, knowing that he wasn't going with them, by the way, is a lot like 3 generations of women unpacking the contents of that cardboard box, telling stories like diamonds, hard and beautiful, memorable and enduring against all odds. Stories given to be told and retold from one generation to the next, most especially when there is a threshold or a border that must be crossed. Stories that remind us who we are and whose the beloved children of the God who promises to be near every single step of the way. Amen.